Support comes from Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to sustainable and sound conservation of the state's forests, which support more than 41,000 Missouri jobs, resulting in a $10 billion industry. Choosewood.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
Well, again, did you not just hear me? Listen, I'm shutting this down. You guys don't get it. A great day for 6.1 million Missourians.
This session, more press conferences have ended with him storming out than haven't. There's an argument to be made that when your enemy is fighting itself, you get out of the way. So
this isn't about me. This is about them. This is about Missourians, 6.1 million Missourians and our children, our educational system. This isn't about me today.
The saga around an ethics complaint against Missouri House Speaker Dean Plocker appears to have come to an end this week. A bipartisan group of Republican and Democratic legislators were looking into a multitude of claims, and that includes how Plocker got House reimbursements for travel expenses that were already paid for by his campaign. And the committee also looked into departures from his staff and whether he improperly tried to implement a private constituent management system. In the end, the Ethics Committee voted down a report that would have recommended a letter of disapproval for Plocker. But the scuttled report was still made public, and it raised questions about whether Plocker obstructed this investigation. Here to talk about this story is Jason Hancock, the editor of the Missouri Independent. The online news publication broke the story of Plocker's woes last year. Jason, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jason, it seems like there were a lot of moving pieces with this ethics complaint. What exactly was Plocker being accused of here?
As you said, there's lots of different facets, but the three main components that the Ethics Committee were looking at were, number one, whether he was improperly pushing the House to enter into a software contract with a private company, and in the midst of that push, whether he was unethically threatening nonpartisan staff who had raised some red flags about that contract. Number two was whether he sort of circled around these sort of illegal reimbursements that he got, where he had paid for things with campaign money, but then filed for reimbursement so that the taxpayers would pay him back for those as if they were personal expenses. And then number three is the firing of his chief of staff last year and whether that constituted retaliation against a whistleblower. Those were the three main components that were sort of the focus of the ethics investigation from the outset.
So one of the obvious questions that even veterans of the Missouri General Assembly may have, including me, is if the Ethics Committee voted 6-2 to reject this report, how exactly did its contents become public?
It was a surprise to all of us. You know, I had spent quite a bit of time with colleagues in the press corps outside of a closed hearing room in the Capitol basement the week before. Because all these hearings, they're confidential, they're closed session. It's almost like an HR proceeding in a lot of ways. And so we're just sort of left trying to read the tea leaves. You know, if you hear laughter behind the door, does that mean it a good thing, a bad thing? And on Monday we came and we expected more of the same, a closed door hearing where we were never going to get any details and that the participants weren't going to be able to talk to us. They stayed in open session. The chair of the committee, Representative Hannah Kelly, put forth a motion to vote on a report. The committee studied it for a little bit, voted it down, clearly because they wanted to go into closed session and have more discussion. Representative Kelly wouldn't allow that. They voted it down. She adjourned. And then to the surprise of everyone, the committee members started to take the report and hand it back in, which, as I presume, is the kind of thing they were doing with all the documents they received in these confidential hearings, giving them back to the attorney and to the chair to be kept confidential. And that's when Representative Kelly said, no, you can keep it. It's an open record now. It was introduced in open session. And that's how this came out.
Well, we'll get to that part a little bit later, but let's go through some of the findings of this report. So one of the things that I've always thought of, especially after the Missouri Independent broke the story about the reimbursements, is it's going to be really difficult to prove that Plocker intentionally sought reimbursements that he already knew were already reimbursed from his campaign. Like, unless he had emails saying, haha, I'm going to try to get these official reimbursements that I've already got reimbursed for. Like, we can't peer inside his head. And I don't know if there was any, like, emails or texts to that effect. Was that always going to be a difficult thing to prove in terms of his intent?
Yeah, and I don't know that the ethics committee necessarily were searching for intent. You know, they're not really talking about a lot of those details. I think it's true that those were violations. It's true that they were illegal. Obviously, he signs affidavits with these reimbursements saying, you know, this came out of my pocket. This did not come from anywhere else. But as to getting to like what was in his heart and what was in his head when he was doing these things, I mean, there's some circumstantial evidence. You know, he was pressing really hard for there was a trip to Hawaii that he went on to attend a conference, and he had bought the tickets with campaign money, the plane tickets to get out there, but he had missed the deadline for turning in the reimbursement. And so then he's haggling with the House administration to try to get them to give the money back. And this was, you know, several thousand dollars at this point. I think it was about $1,900 maybe, but, and so you can kind of glean like, well, how did he not know? Like, this was a lot of money, and he's got to deal with a lot of paperwork. But as far as getting into, like, as you said, like, where was his head at when he was doing all this? I mean, that's probably a task too large even for the ethics committee to handle.
Now, when we're talking about the constituent management contract, I heard an interview with David Steelman, who was an attorney for Plocker. Maybe he still is. And one of the points that he made was like Plocker didn't have the unilateral power to issue a new constituent management contract. That would have to go through the Office of Administration, probably because the cost was required that sort of step. What do you make of that argument? And what do you make of the argument from, I guess, from Plocker's defenders that he's not this all-powerful constituent management implementer wizard that people are saying he is?
I mean, that could very well be true, but I know that if you look at the records and the documents that came out in the aftermath of that push, you know, it does seem as though he was pushing very hard behind the scenes to get the House Administration Committee, not the state's sort of contracting arm, to approve that contract. There was very little talk about putting it out to bid, at least in the public records, and that was raising a lot of heartburn amongst a lot of these nonpartisan staffers. That was the big thing that they were concerned about, was is this thing getting forced through without any sort of oversight? And it all kind of came to a head at a hearing in last September in the House Administration Committee, where they discussed the possibility of making the switch. There was a lot of concern about what would happen putting constituent information in the hands of private company. And ultimately that idea was kind of tossed, and they decided to stick with the in-house program that they had. So I think that probably in a perfect world, that's exactly as Mr. Steelman explained, like how the process should have worked. It doesn't seem as though, at least from the records that we received during that saga, that was at least the speaker's thoughts about how this would go. And that's what raised so many red flags internally, at least that kind of got this whole thing to break out into the open.
So the big quote that I think a lot of people have honed in on is from an attorney for the committee. And she said, quote, "I have not encountered more unwilling witnesses in any investigation in my career. The level of fear expressed by a number of potential witnesses is a daunting factor in completing this investigation." And I mean, without more witnesses, I don't know if you could have proven either intent around the reimbursements or if anything improper happened with the constituent management system. So is that basically why they couldn't definitively find that he did like certain things wrong that they were investigating, the lack of cooperation from witnesses?
I think there's a couple things at play. I think that's definitely the huge part. If you can't get the people with the knowledge, a lot of the report talks about people that had information that would have been valuable for the committee who were unwilling to come forward out of fear of retaliation. Or there was indications or at least allegations of potential threats either by the speaker's office or his allies. There's also the piece that, you know, while the last few weeks, the speaker's office, the speaker himself, his allies and associates have been decrying how long this process has played out, been hammering the committee, saying that this was intentional, it's being drug out to hurt him politically. when we see the records that were included, and setting aside the allegations of witness tampering, just looking at the records that were provided, while he was publicly decrying how long the process took, he was privately and behind the scenes throwing sand in the gears of the investigation by not cooperating with the investigator for 3 months, by refusing to sign subpoenas for 2 months. So that's a big part of the allegation of obstruction, is not just the witness piece, but also the other side of it with the refusal to cooperate. They say it repeatedly in that report that made it really hard for the investigation to run its course and do its work. And at the same time that all that's happening, it's being the delays are being weaponized to kind of undermine the eventual determination that the committee was hoping to come to.
We're talking with Jason Hancock, the editor of the Missouri Independent, about the ethics investigation on Missouri House Speaker Dean Plocker. So you mentioned the scrutiny, and there has been a lot of scrutiny on State Representative Hannah Kelly, the Ethics Committee chairwoman. Some of Plocker's surrogates have not only, as you said, criticized her for the length of the investigation, they've gone like a step further. They've inferred that like she's been a disgrace to her family, who have been involved in Missouri politics for a long time. And she put out a statement on Facebook, and I want to read part of it. "Unfortunately, because of the efforts by the speaker to threaten witnesses, block our investigation, and prevent this process from reaching its natural conclusion, there's nothing more that can be done. The report speaks for itself, as do the votes of the committee members. However, because of the culture of fear and retaliation discussed in the report, I have grave concerns about the environment that is developing in the House." What do you make of that statement, and what do you make of the fierce criticism from Plocker's surrogates against Representative Kelly?
I'll start with the second part first. It's really interesting because we have to remember, and Jason, you know this from years of covering the State House, like the ethics chair is a pretty important appointment that the speaker makes because it's a terrible job. You're kind of like the internal affairs in a lot of ways. You have to weigh the fate of your colleagues if they're accused of ethical violations, harassment. And Dean Plocker appointed Hannah Kelly.
And just to interrupt, like, she's already the chairwoman of the Children's and Families Committee, which is another thankless committee job, but a very important one given that the Children's Division is under so much turmoil. But continue.
Yeah, absolutely. So to me, that says that at least at some point, Dean Plocker felt that she was not only capable, but was, you know, one of the most, was given two chairmanships that are highly important and very difficult. And so it is interesting now to see that, like, as this process drags on, the other side is demonizing her, making her sound like incompetent, easily manipulated. It's very surprising. I didn't expect that turn. I didn't expect them to go at her so personally. As far as her statement that she posted on Facebook, I mean, she went a lot further than she did when she was addressing reporters. But I think it's coming from a place like that is honest to her. I think she's looking around and saying, like, we're trying to do this job. We've been undermined at every step of the way. That's her allegation. We've been demonized. They demanded transparency. Well, here you go. And like, it's also telling that after that report was released and they adjourned that Monday, the rest of the hearings that week were canceled. And we're sort of left in this impasse of nothing's been approved. Nothing's been dismissed. Everybody's sort of pointing the finger at everyone else, and we're left with this report that seems to document some really, really dark allegations against the speaker that, you know, at some point he'll have to answer for, one would think, and try to address some of these things he's been accused of.
Well, let's talk about that. Plocker did not seem to want to talk about this ethics report at all when the House adjourned and he went before reporters yesterday.
Fellas, this isn't about me. This is about them. This is about Missouri and 6.1 million Missourians and our children, our educational system. This isn't about me today. Any other questions concerning this education bill?
The report from the committee, of course, was a draft report, but
Did you not just hear me? Listen, I'm shutting this down. You guys don't get it. Great day for 6.1 million Missourians, our kids, our teachers, our administrators. Thank you all.
Amen.
That is House Speaker Dean Plocker cutting short a press conference yesterday with reporters. So I've known Plocker for a while. This seems out of character for him because he's never been this short with the press. I also recall that when his chief of staff, Rod Jetton, was speaker and he faced a lot of controversy about a lot of things, he often had very robust question and answer sessions with reporters about these things and was willing to answer anything. What do you make of the fact that he just doesn't seem to want to talk about this publicly?
It's hard to put your finger on, because I agree that before this session, he was a pretty accessible speaker. He was regularly interacting with the press. And I get when, you know, times get tough, maybe you don't want to answer these questions that might be uncomfortable. But when you say it's out of character, it is out of character maybe previously. But this session, more press conferences have ended with him storming out than haven't. I can think of three or four right off the top of my head. There's, I think, maybe just one that he made it all the way to the end of without storming out angrily. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, one of them was, I think, a day or two after the mass shooting in the Kansas City Super Bowl parade. He was asked his thoughts on it. He refused to answer. And when somebody asked another question, he stormed out. So there is this sort of temper that's happening this session. Maybe it's the stress of being under investigation. Maybe it's, you know, maybe there's other things going on. I honestly don't know. But it is unusual that he's being accused of these things. Threatening witnesses, whether in personally or his allies, you know, obstructing the investigation. These are serious allegations that you'd think he would want to answer or at least give his take on. And so far, he's decided he's just not going to.
My final question for you before I let you go. One of the things I noticed is there did not seem to be a Democratic pile on. In fact, a number of Democratic committee members voted against finalizing this report. What do you make of that? I think that was kind of noticeable, at least to me.
Yeah, as far as the committee vote, it's hard to read the tea leaves on exactly what those votes meant. You know, did they mean they disagreed with the report? They wanted changes? Maybe. Did they think maybe it didn't go far enough? Maybe. I think a few of them voted no because they wanted more discussion, or they were kind of upset with Hannah Kelly, who admittedly did not tell them ahead of time what she was going to do and that this was going to happen in open session. So it's hard to say like exactly why people voted the way they did. But you're right, four Democrats voted no, along with two other Republicans. So, but more broadly speaking, yeah, the Democrats haven't joined in the pylon. I think there's some ideological reasons for that. Maybe they just think that some of the Republicans are being hypocrites. I've heard some say like, you don't condemn Donald Trump, but you condemn Dean Plocker. How is that fair? I also think there's an argument to be made that when your enemy is fighting itself, you get out of the way. So there's probably a little bit of politics in that as well.
Jason Hancock is the editor of the Missouri Independent, which wrote extensively about the controversy around House Speaker Dean Plocker. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.